It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy. This is number 294. And although the cities are 15 minutes, this podcast is going to go a little longer. My name is Joey, here as always with my co-host, Len. Buddy, how you doing over there? What's up?
All is good. I don't live in a 15-minute city. Where the heck is a 15-minute city even within 150 kilometers from here?
Listen, there's not that much like firepower for these cold opens. I'm trying to do my best to surprise you. Ever since that data breach and overreaching, I've been trying to outdo myself. And I'll get better as the days go along here. We'll try to find some other good one-liners. Anyway, so yeah, welcome back. Number 294, as I mentioned, you can sign up for the email version of this podcast, the written version. If you go to Access of Easy, sign up, use your email there like you would for any other newsletter, or you can subscribe on your favorite podcast app. This was on the CBP feed for a long time. I think we're going to move it all over to the Access of Easy feed. So we'll note this on our next episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. But if you want to continue to listen, and the numbers on our feed have been pretty good, so I think there's a lot of you out there who want to continue to listen, grab Access of Easy on your podcast feeds. Access, A-X-I-S of Easy, all one word with the pound sign, the hashtag sign in front of it. And you'll get all the good content that we come through with every week and that the EasyDNS crowd writes every week as well. So I hope that you guys subscribe. Hope that you sign up. And yeah, I think that's about it. Now let's get into the housekeeping here. Last week's quote, always important. Most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. That was from Abraham Lincoln. And Charles, I'm not going to give his full name just in case he doesn't want it out there, but it is on the website. Mr. Charles is the winner.
He's definitely nice one in there. Charge after this.
Absolutely. Congratulations. And this week, Len, great quote. What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. And that's by, of course, someone. You can't look on Google for the answer. You can't search. You definitely can't ask ChatGPT. Don't send us DMs. We don't know. And we're not cheating for you. The first person to get the answer, of course, by posting it in the comments, gets their next domain or hosting renewal on the house, which is
That wouldn't be coming from me. I'm as hollow as a empty beer can. So that definitely is not coming from me. But Joey, there's tons to talk about today. And we'll lead off with the Lazarus Group. We talked about these people. I don't want to call them goons because I don't want to stay on their good side. We talked about them in Access of Easy 289. Check the audio out in the archives or for more information, or even go on the Access of Easy website and you could read a little bit more about or hear a little bit more. We talked about them in the past. Well, they're back in the news as one of their children have spawned a subgroup known as Death Note, and it's linked to a new malware that's now out in the wild, and it's a malware cluster known as the Operation Dream Job or Nukesped. These names just roll off the tongue. I can't believe it. But the important thing of note, aside from the names, is that Death Note seems to be evolving as a we'll call them an organization. Dare I say they're maturing as their skills and the deployment of malicious programs get more and more advanced. The cluster, which I mentioned, started off as a novel downloader in October 2019, which attacked cryptocurrency businesses. Hopefully they didn't take any Bitcoin. But anyways, and then they shifted their focus over to defense industry back in April 2020. And they mainly targeted the automotive and academic sectors across Eastern Europe. They're not likely to tap into the schematics of Lada and Trabants. Those are two notable Soviet-level cars, or Soviet-era cars. I'm not sure if you heard them before, Joey, but they're not desirable cars that we had anyway. So they're going after defense contractors and diplomatic services. And it's noted that Death Note was behind an attack that impacted a European vendor back in May 2021. And they didn't just stop there in Europe. They moved on and they went in June 2021. South Korean targets were noted as being infected by mechanisms. And not only that, they went even further. They just spanning the whole globe. And in July 2022, Death Note was noted to have evolved enough to have been going after defense contractors in Africa by taking advantage of vulnerability in Skype Messenger. I haven't heard that name in a little while. So yeah, here you go. They're back in the news and they're getting more and more involved in trying to take information from all these defense contractors out there. interesting stuff. I wouldn't want to be on the bad side of these very, very skilled individuals over there at Death Note. What are your thoughts on this one, Joey?
I'm with you on the, you know, getting on the right side of these guys. I will just note that Secure List, which is the source for the story, has a couple of really cool, way above my head, admittedly, schematics on how this thing works. And it's really interesting to see that, you know, there's some things here you will recognize, like PDF files, you know, memory attacks, executables, downloaders. You as a retail facing person who uses a computer, or like a, you know, a retail internet facing person, you have this stuff on your computer. And it's funny, you know, that with the advent of kind of, I shouldn't say advent, maybe the evolution of work from home and hybrid work and all these things, there's a lot more people now, I think, Len, opening PDFs like in a jiffy without really thinking about some of the vulnerabilities might be present. So this is a good example. Lazarus Group is doing a lot of interesting, very diplomatic language there again, trying to stay on their good side. Interesting work in the field of data breaching and overreaching, as I've said before. And so like this is pretty wild. You know what I'm curious about? Why is it that every time we do a story like this, it seems to me like the big hit, right? The home run was with a company that really should have really rock solid cyber defense strategies, but yet it's never the case. And now they're talking about security outfits. That's pretty significant, don't you think?
Yeah, and you know, a lot of these over-the-counter security protocols and networks and, you know, everything that you could put up to prevent all this, they just don't work. And there's easy ways to get around it. Even, you know, the software we use, they need to be patched periodically to avoid the vulnerabilities that are included in it, which kind of leads me to the next topic, which is, while we talk about it to a high degree of frequency, you got to make sure you keep your software up to date and apply all the security patches that are available to you. And well, this next story is because it's Microsoft. They released a swath of security patch updates, and this is to close a bunch of holes in their software. In fact, a total of 97 flaws have been patched, and the software that they're patching up includes the Edge browser, but not just that, also the Windows operating system. And one of the more concerning things is that there is remote code execution flaws, oh man, as well as elevation of privilege vulnerabilities. Those two, man, they could do a lot of damage to the end user. And before you're aware with it, the information that you have that is stored on your computer is long gone. And essentially, it's the horse that left the barn. Closing the door at that point, it doesn't make any sense. So look, no system out there is 100% secured. It's just not the case. There's always going to be new backdoors out there and flaws that are going to be unearthed, especially as people find more creative ways to obtain information. It's really your information, your business's information, your country's information. And a lot of this information is being digitally stored on our computers or on a cloud somewhere or whatever. And this makes for a very prized target for all of us. The information is valuable not only to us, but for somebody else out there. So do yourself a favor, make sure that you do update all your software, make sure it's to latest security patches, be careful with all your data, and most importantly, don't run Windows, man. If you have a chance to not use it, try not using it. It's a my two cents, man.
Man, I have a Windows, this is a Windows laptop, actually, the one that we do the shows on, and there's, I will say, like, apart from gaming, there's not really much on here, but even just the gaming that I do, you know, there's a lot of third-party installers, NVIDIA, Steam, you know, among others. I don't want to give away my entire suite of programs here for, you know, an attentive listener, let's say, but there is a lot of stuff here that leaves you open to vulnerabilities if you're not updating everything. And so I will say that although I think a lot of people understand, myself included, that Microsoft has a lot of security vulnerabilities, one of the reasons, you know, one of the trade-offs in having something that's so retail friendly is that there will be vulnerabilities. The thing that Microsoft can do, has done, and is doing here is making sure that everyone can do the updates as required, as easily and as quickly as possible. And so Windows Update does that pretty well. I have a couple of Mac machines. I'm familiar with that ecosystem. They do that pretty well, whether it's mobile or home OS. And I'm sure Linux has something similar, right? If, like, whatever Linux kernel you're using, whatever distro you're using, I'm sure there's frequent updates and forums and Reddits and stuff you can go to if you're a keen observer of these sorts of things. The question I have is, you know, Microsoft seems to be the target of a lot of these things. And yet, you know what I never see, Len? I never see Microsoft making significant investments in security. I see them making significant investments in a lot of other, you know, branches of I don't know. There's a way to say this that's not coming to me right now, but sort of adjacent tools that would make sense next to an ecosystem like the Microsoft operating suite, the home operation suite. But I don't see a lot of investment in security. Is that because they don't want to be forthcoming with that to the public and to potential attackers? Or is it because they're really not making those preemptive investments? And preemptive is a word I'm using very, very intentionally, because Microsoft does a lot of good stuff after the fact, right? Zero-day exploits and all this kind of stuff that's happened to them in the past, whether it was their home operating system or their mobile operating system or their servers or anything like that. They've done a good job with this. One of the other things I'll note before I pass it to you for that question, you know, whether or not we should be concerned that this is always after the fact and not preemptive. Do you remember how well-regarded XP Service Pack 2 was? Because it was just so tightly secured and so efficient for the users. A lot of people I know, even dating back to like 12, 13 years ago when I was in a position to sell used computers, I won't go into too much detail on that, but everyone wanted XP SP2. Every single person that bought a computer, no matter how low level their expertise was, low level their understanding was of why, they all knew that that was what they wanted. And so Microsoft understands that there's value to like an airtight operating environment, but seems to have gotten away from it. And so I don't know why they've gotten away from it. It seems to me they have the expertise to do this, but they don't do it anymore. Everything is after the fact and not preemptive. Do you have a thought on that? I realize that's a big question here, but do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's just the operating system itself is just very, very large. I don't want to call it bloated, but maybe it is there. And it, because of that, it's so hard to close all the loopholes that exist. And another thing, because it's not open source, you don't have other people that could be contributing to securing it as well. So that's another reason why that may be, because it's just the within the walled gardens over there in Microsoft that they're able to look at it and patch the code. That could be another reason, but I'm just spitballing here. I could be wrong. I do think they put a lot of money into it, but the thing is just such a big operating system and so many people use it. So it just becomes a much easy, like a big target. That's easy to hit by a lot of these people, but let's move on. We'll talk about ETH. That's something we do talk about ourselves very frequently. And for those who are unaware, this is the digital asset that holds the second largest market cap. It's the title of the second largest market cap, at Bitcoin being number one. And I'm not going to get into the reasons why people shouldn't buy or use ETH. This is a topic for another time on another show. This story is about DNS outage and the Ethereum name service, the ENS, which are the people behind the .eth domain names, have made a request through the courts to move the eth.link to a different registrar. And the genesis of this move was due to an outage of the eth.limo domain or URL. And when you go to eth.limo, what is it, you ask? It's a privacy-preserving ENS gateway for resolving Ethereum name service records and associated Web3 content. They will also allow users and decentralized app developers to access and host static sites that work in the Web3 and ENS ecosystem. So this is a very important project for the ETH community. And this outage was likely a real kick to the nuts for the people over there. And it's probably the same feeling you get every time you buy ETH. And how do they resolve the DNS outage over there? Well, look at this. They moved their domain services, their registrar to EasyDNS.
You could have predicted this. It's predictable, Len. You go with the goat. You go with the goat.
Yeah. Well, lo and behold, all their problems were vanished. And well, you know, DNS problems long gone. So chalk up another one. Why one should use EasyDNS? The product just works.
Big win for EasyDNS. Funny that continuing to sort of rear its ugly head are these vulnerabilities associated with the initial rollouts of Web3 adjacent stuff, ETH adjacent stuff. I don't want to talk too much about smart contracts. I don't know if that was a factor here. It doesn't seem to have been, but like it's really at this point, it's difficult for me to understand how a seasoned either technologist or crypto investor looks at that token in that ecosystem and Web3 maybe more broadly even. I don't want to go as far as to call it a scam on this air, but I would on our other show. It's difficult for me to understand how the money keeps flowing in short of greater fool theory. And this is just another example, right? EasyDNS has managed to salvage, you know, the best of this tire fire, it seems. So, you know, great for Mark and team. But all said, Len, like it's constant with this network, this ecosystem. It never ends. I saw like sort of an aside here. I saw a tweet today of a guy who's been draining ETH and other projects on ETH through some wallet exploit vis-a-vis an airdrop for like a year, apparently. And so like I have to look into this more, but someone just noticed it today. Like, hold on, man, this guy's been siphoning money from a bunch of people for like almost a clean calendar year now. Anyway,
don't people check their wallet balances? Come on, man.
I mean, how often do you check?
I don't want to give it the numbers, but it's definitely more than once a month. And if something is being drained from it, I would notice in very, very short period of time.
Interesting.
But let's move on. And for the people out there that are using Action One remote access software, you should be aware of there's a security hole, and it potentially gives hackers the ability to deploy ransomware on network. Now, Action One, they tout themselves as, quote, the number one risk-based patch management platform for distributed networks trusted by thousands of global enterprises. I guess this attack no longer makes them number one, because who is the governing body that's actually judging these things? These are sadly questions we'll probably never get answered. But
it's the Miss America story. Guys, isn't it? I thought it was the same. is it?
Just a bunch of guys in the back room drinking whiskey with smoking cigars and all that shit. But anyways, back to the story. If you are an Action One user, you should really consider installing the recent patch that was released. And this is closing all these holes. And also, alongside, there is recommendations that you have to start monitoring your network activity to detect any unusual activity. And consider also making changes to your passwords, and also throw in two-factor authentication. And we talked about 2FA in previous shows. Steer clear of the garbage like SMS. That's just a recipe for disaster. Consider using a program like OpenOTP or AndOTP, and that's an open source software. And you could also backup, encrypt your backups. And it seems to be a rather good way of doing a two-factor authentication. But another thing, given that Action One is free to up to 1,000 endpoints, it makes me wonder how many networks out there has been impacted, because it was free for up to 100 endpoint users. So that's a high number of endpoint users per network that could be using this Action One software. So a lot of sensitive information out there that may be potentially used as a bargaining chip. If they found these holes, patch them up right away, change your passwords, do your 2FA, but not SMS.
So this is a similar attack. I'll just quote here from Bleeping Computer. However, we were told that the tactics, techniques, and procedures, TTPs, echo an attack that the BlackBerry Incident Response Team investigated last summer. The threat researchers attributed the attack to a group called Monty that was unknown at the time. The hackers breached the environment after exploiting the log4 shell vulnerability. Len, if you had told me that BlackBerry, Research in Motion's BlackBerry, was still running a security product that was being used by someone other than BlackBerry itself, I would have said no way. That would have been take a shot if you're wrong, and I'd be downing a shot of tequila. And I'm looking now at the BlackBerry Incident Response website, and it's a service they offer. It seems to me that anyone who's willing to pay for it. So great, cool. As far as the attack itself and the vulnerabilities, 2FA continues to be a theme on this show. I think this is the eighth episode of this program that we've done. And how many times over the 2 months we've been doing the audio sidekick for the newsletter, have we talked about 2FA?
At least thrice.
Three or four times, I think. Yeah. So, you're batting about 40% here, 30-40%. And I'm unsure at this point why people don't have something like Authy, Google Authenticator, Microsoft Authenticator. There was an open source one that you talked about one time. What was that one called?
The AndOTP.
AndOTP. Okay.
It's a really good one because it's open source. You can back up your data, and it's an encrypted backup as well. So when you store it, just in case it happens to land in somebody's hands that you don't want it, they don't have direct access to it. They're going to have to hack into that file. It's difficult to do so. I like AndOTP. It's a very good product. Also, you need a password. You could set it up. You need a password just to log into it. So
yeah,
I love it. I'll talk about it all day.
There's lots of good stuff on the open source terrain. Just one other quote here from Action One. So at the same time, I would like to emphasize that these attacks do not target Action One users since our platform has not been compromised. Fine, but all said, as always on the Access of Easy podcast here, important things you should be doing fairly frequently. Double checking to make sure you have 2FA enabled, double checking to make sure your password's not easy to guess. There's services, I think, that let you know if you've been wrecked. I believe that might even be the name of one of the services, miwrecked.com or something
and
like
I
that.
And I wonder if that's a way for just data harvesting. Putting your name up or your email address out there, it might be a cache that they could use for gathering this information.
It's going to be, I've known you for about 10 years and we've been doing, the CBP together for 2 of those years. And it's going to be a sad day when you're no longer willing to even go online because of all these data concerns you have. And I have to go solo for this show and the CBP. But in the meantime, we're going to continue to have fun anyways.
I'll do a NIM at that point. I'll put on a mask like a Mexican wrestler and go from there. Anyways, some Google and Easy DNS announcements. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about some technical stuff first. So we have the SPF, and this prevents spammers from sending unauthorized messages that appear to coming from your domain. And also DKIM, and this is a verification tool that confirms the domain owner actually sent the message. Well, so we now know the terms. Let's get to the story. So the email servers, well, typically they have to have these things. So now if you do have it, you're good to go. Because if you don't, you may be noticing you haven't been receiving emails from Gmail starting from November 2022. This is now a requirement, it looks like, from Gmail. But this isn't really a Gmail story. It looks like that this is something that is also available too on EasyDNS. And not only that, EasyDNS has made it easy for you to actually to create it and start it. They have a tool called SPF Wizard, and it will easily set up and correct the records in your domain. So if you have a domain set up, if you have an email server set up and you don't have it already updated, well, this wizard is going to make your life so much easier so that you could communicate once again with Gmail and other email providers out there that require you to have both SPF and DKIM.
Rock solid. I love this idea of preventing spam. Google and other email providers, I won't speak about Proton, but the sort of the big retail facing ones, they do a decent job with Spamland, but oftentimes I still find stuff in there that I shouldn't, stuff that I needed or forgot about, a year ago, 2 months ago, something like that. And it's frustrating. So for EasyDNS to be working on products that make this easier for people to parse what is good, what is bad. And this, I just want to note that the in-domain spam message, the fake domain matching or whatever. I don't know exactly what you would call that, but
I call it like a spoof, a pseudo spoof.
We had a story about that on this program, the Coinbase ones, right? And we read out a couple of those emails. Those emails are pretty darn close to what you would expect to see if you were working in that corporate environment. If you were a new person or a low tier guy, you could see
they were able to screw people working inside Coinbase.
I know. That's what I'm saying. If only they had had these tools available, then could have figured this out. Is EasyDNS going to work with Coinbase at some point? I don't know.
Who knows? They may be a foreign entity at that point because there's talk
that's
that
right.
They just
Bermudan, the Bermudan exchange,
Coinbase. Or Singapore, or wherever they'll just shop for a better place that they could do business and they won't be impacted by the local laws. So, yeah,
great, love it. That's it, that's all we got.
We won't be ourselves jurisdiction shopping. We are where we are, we're gonna stay where we are.
I'm not going anywhere. We're Canadian. EasyDNS is Canadian. We're Canadian. And all shows and programs will be Canadian. Great job today, buddy. Thanks for listening, everyone. Don't forget, this show is going to be on the EasyDNS feed from here on out. We want to push that over to the EasyDNS feed. And please sign up for the newsletter. Head over to, let me give you that address one more time here before I forget. It is accessofeasy.com, just the way it sounds, just the way it's spelled.com. And of course, you can subscribe on your favorite podcast app. So do that. You must like listening to this show. I know that people read and listen. So definitely make sure you take some time and do that. That's it. I think, Len, you got anything you want to add, or are we out of here?
No, I think that's good. Let's rock and roll.
We're out of here. Take care, everybody.